Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Now, Ireland is still falling short of the reductions required to meet national and EU targets. That's according to the Environmental Protection Agency today. For a reaction to this, we're joined by Marie Donnelly, chairperson of the Climate Change Advisory Council. And you're very welcome to the programme, Marie. 1.9% reduction is what we've seen in terms of the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, which is, I mean, it's welcome to see the figures going down instead of up, but it's nowhere near enough, is it?
That's absolutely correct. Yes, it is welcome. It's I hope, an indicator that the tanker is turning and that we're now going to go in the right direction. But clearly, we are falling behind and we are not moving fast enough. So the message really from the council is we need to do more, we need to do it much faster, and we probably need to go much deeper than we have done so far.
Well, we certainly do. If we want to hit our targets for 2025, we'd need to have a 12.4% reduction in our greenhouse gas emissions each year between now and 2025 to hit our climate targets. That's just not going to happen, is it?
Well, if I take, for example, the star performer in the figures that EPA have come out with, and that's the residential building sector, the reduction for them was 13%. So what we're really looking for is a replication of that, not just in the residential building sector, but indeed across the other sectors as well. And can I point out what we would analyse in the context of the residential building sector? It's an area where government has put funding behind it, but they also have a structured approach to the policy that's, you know, taking people out of cold, damp homes, that's basically upskilling the labour force and creating jobs. So, and allowing people to get away from expensive and, you know, emitting fossil fuels. So, you know, the benefits, shall we say, of the green shift are very evident in the residential building sector. And that's the kind of policy that we need, and that's the kind of results that we need across the other policy sectors in order to achieve our targets.
Yeah, and in this particular instance, the big standout here for negative reasons is transport. So is it the case then that we just simply don't have the policies in place in transport that we need to have the emissions reductions?
Yes, you're absolutely right. We have a real issue with transport. Of course, during COVID, the emissions did drop. And what we're seeing now is a rebound from COVID. And unless something dramatic happens, we're going to overshoot very badly in the area of transport. And what we're calling for there are very clear measures. Clear measures, first of all, ensuring that there are choices available for people to get out of their cars and use public transport. That means we need greater investment in public transport. We need a public transport system that is operating efficiently, and the app tells you the truth as to whether the bus is going to come or not. And we need safe and secure active travel alternatives. You know, if parents want to cycle to school with their kids, it has to be safe. We need to put these measures in place so that people have a choice. And, you know, we may have to think about, is it equitable that people can continue to take up the roads and emit fumes and particulate matter and noise in a continuous sense when we're trying to move in the other direction? And the council has already said, you know, we're looking at issues of demand management for traffic in terms of the big cities, for example, in terms of how do you manage traffic into the cities and how do you manage, for example, parking in the city spaces. So I think it's going to require a double barreled approach. We have to facilitate, we have to allow people to make the choice, and we have to support that choice, but we also have to make it better for them to make that choice than not.
Okay, so are you talking there, for example, about congestion charges?
It's certainly one. We've already mentioned that. As you know, the Taxation Commission has already mentioned it. We feel it's very important that we look at the whole issue of, you know, the economic cost of people sitting in traffic for an hour and a half each way every day. The noise, the pollution, the particulate matter, the congestion on the streets in our cities. You know, this is something that makes sense.
Mary, I know that, like, a lot of people, most people would prefer not to be doing that either. You know, if they had options, like, for example, if they were able to live closer to their workplace, but it's too expensive, for example, to live in the city because of house prices, or if they had public transport options, but they simply don't have the public transport options. If they're living perhaps in commuter towns around, I'm taking Dublin as an example, but I think it could apply to plenty of other urban areas around the country, that the public transport options aren't there.
But that's exactly what we're saying. We need more investment into the public transport options. We need more, for example, electric buses. We need them on the roads. We don't need them in the depots. We need them on the roads. We need to have the timetables there that suit people so that they can have the choice to go to work. And of course, now following COVID, we have a situation where in many instances, and we would certainly encourage this, where people have a choice maybe not to have to go into the office 5 days a week, and they could go maybe 3 days a week.
And yet we're seeing more and more companies, we're hearing urging people to get back in some cases in 5 days a week. Is that something you think the government need to look at from the transport perspective more seriously, to give a very strong directive to companies to let people stay at home rather than, you know, to let people stay at home if the companies feel like it?
Well, whilst not being an expert in this area, but the figures I've seen from any of the analysis is showing that productivity did not actually drop when people were working from home. It certainly seems to be something that certainly the younger cohort of our workforce seem to like. It makes sense, certainly to me, that we do it. So it seems like a no-brainer that that's a policy that, you know, modern employers would wish to use in any event. And I think, yes, the government should support them.
I might just get you back to the figures then, if we're talking about the 12.4% reduction each year. And I know you're saying we can see from the residential sector, housing sector, that that's possible because they've reached it. But if you're talking about public transport being one of the main factors that we need to get the transport sector back on track, that's not going to happen in the next 2 years. It's probably not going to happen in the next 5, 6, 7 years, because we know how long those projects take to get through, even if they are planned. So where does that leave us with transport in terms of reaching our targets?
You've put your finger on an issue there, which is how long it takes us to actually roll out large infrastructure projects. And transport is a key area. You're absolutely right. But it's not just transport. We've seen this again and again. If I look at the electricity sector, where, you know, we're rolling out renewable electricity, which is very good, but we need to strengthen the grid in order to be able to do that. We're having delays in that. We need to think about large infrastructure investments, for example, in terms of more concentrated development of our urban spaces so that people can walk from their home to the services, you know, this famous 15-minute town or city, as they say. So we need a very much more resourced planning authorities, both at national and local level, in order to process these applications and process them in a timely way. Otherwise, we cannot achieve our goals.
Somebody's texted here on your point of electric buses, and I think you were sort of alluding to this, that story that we saw, that article from Michael McDougall in the Irish Times earlier in the week talking about the electric buses. This person says, with no charging points because of planning, this person says, no joined up thinking, 100 buses at €600,000 each. And as you say, a lot of them sitting in the depots because the charging infrastructure isn't there for the buses. You know, I mean, you know, you really would scratch your head at it. In terms of the agriculture sector, and they always get such a hammering, but their emissions actually did fall in this particular instance. Now, again, a small amount, 1.2% they fell by, but there was a 14% reduction in the use of artificial nitrogen fertilizer in that time. And we've heard a lot from farmers about how much work they've done on nitrogen and how, you know, that has been a very difficult change for them in transition. But obviously more needs to be done in this particular sector because they're responsible for over 38% of the emissions.
Yes, and the agricultural sector, earlier this week, I don't know whether you had a chance to look at it, Chagas, the research body for agriculture, has come out with a number of pathways to achieve the targets by 2030. And you're quite right, to be technical for a moment, you know, a significant shift, but almost a complete shift to protected urea as a fertilizer is a hugely contributing factor for that. It's starting, we're at about 15 or 16% at the moment. We need to get that up to 90 to 100% in the next 2 years. That's, you know, cost effective for farmers. It's available. It's a new technology and it delivers really good results for the farmers. That's one area that we need to look at. Early finishing of animals will reduce the methane coming from our herds. But also we have new innovations, new technologies coming down the track that have been developed outside of Ireland, which we now need to adopt in Ireland. For example, feed additives that can also reduce the methane coming from our herds. So there is a pathway. That, in fact, there are a number of pathways already outlined there, which will allow farmers and the agricultural sector to achieve their carbon budget in a very cost-effective way. Okay. One of the issues, though, we need to do is we need to support farmers, particularly those farmers who are, you know, diverting into new products such as organics. We need to support them. We need to support them in the retail outlets by labelling and by purchasing those products.
Just finally then, Mary, a texter here on this issue is wondering about aviation. They say the DAA have built a new runway. They're maximising flight numbers, no taxation on aviation fuel. It makes a joke of environmental policy, which he appears to have turned a blind eye to aviation policy, that person says. And again, it doesn't tend to be part of the conversation.
Well, you're right. It's not part of the conversation because it's not covered by our legislation at this point in time. This has been a very difficult discussion internationally because, of course, aviation is an international activity. Mm. And there's very little point in Ireland closing its doors to aviation when the rest of the world does it. So what we're working on is what they call CORSIA. It's kind of an international agreement on emission reductions in the aviation industry, but worldwide. And a big factor of that is what they call sustainable aviation fuels. And longer term, this is a role for Ireland in terms of producing those fuels.
All right. We'll leave it there for the moment. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Mary Donnelly, Chairperson of the Climate Change Advisory Council. We'll take a break.